This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 733, brought to you by NordVPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy and use code iFanboy to take control of your internet experience today. And iFanboy listeners, just like you, who are washing their hands, wearing masks, and basically just stay inside.
And enunciating the hell out of that.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 733. I am Connor Kilpatrick, and this is Josh Flanagan.
I am. Hi, Connor Kilpatrick.
My beard is getting to the point now where the ends of it are curling into my mouth,
You gotta,
which is annoying.
Yeah, and, you got to keep up with that.
And as I'm talking, I'm also eating my own face.
Oh, God. Even when mine doesn't get that long, that happens. That's my main facial hair maintenance, is to stop it from touching me. I don't like, because I have curl, it's curly, and so like it always curls around and it touches me. I don't want to feel my hair touch my forehead. I don't want to feel my beard touch the side of my mouth. It's a constant, it's like fighting the tide.
It's a constant battle.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, we are iFanboy and we read our comics as they come out. We're somewhat normal this week as Marvel put books out, but still not very many books coming out, and next week is going to be the same thing. We're going to ride this wave as it comes, but we read our books, we pick the best one, call it the pick of the week, talk about other books, and you get spoilers in your discussion. So here's your warning that there'll be spoilers. This week, Josh had to pick. Yeah, and you only had like 5 books, right?
5, 6, something like that. I tried to get one that I couldn't, and yeah, so the... It was not an easy pick until I
did not envy you this week.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like sometimes it's a thing that sticks out, and then sometimes you got to do the math. And I think this week I had to do the math, and so I went, well, we'll go through most of these books, but like I enjoyed Amazing Spider-Man, but was it great or did it just make me feel like kind of good at the end? Yeah, it's kind of the latter. I enjoyed Avengers. But, you know, there were some things. And then I was looking at Books of Magic number 19, which is the pick. And there's a new writer that came on, David Barnett, and the artist Tom Fowler. And it just took a slightly different direction than it had been going. And it was different. It was unique. And it was kind of fun to see what was going on. So basically... Tim Hunter is a wizard. He's a magician. He's a teenager, so he's got sort of equal bouts of awkwardness and overconfidence that he goes through, and that's kind of his character. It's a little different than it's very easy to compare him to Harry Potter, which is, I think, been done a lot, but Harry Potter is definitely a different type of character. And this one's a little more vertigo. We'll put it that way. And so the opening of this story is this like just decrepit sort of like aging hipster character, and he's in a wheelchair, and a very happy lady has come in to take care of him, to help him, you know, like for home assistance, and he's surrounded by records in a dark room. And then all these creepy dudes come to the door, and they basically, he trades them some legendary purple acid for a real muse, like a real, like, live muse, like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, you know, like a supernatural being.
Right.
And you're like, well, this is odd. And then
Sharon Stone.
Yes.
In the film The Muse.
That's true. Albert Brooks, right? Yeah, that's not creepy in retrospect at all. And then at the same time, Tim is out and he meets a girl, you know, Manic Pixie Dream Girl, and she's doing magic, and he's, and like, not very well and not a lot of it, but he's like, you can't do that. There's consequences. You can't just do whatever, you know. And but she still kind of intrigues him, and so he starts falling around. And then he's really happy, actually, to meet somebody who's not scared of him, and who at least knows what magic is, and it's something that doesn't have to keep a secret. And they, you know, get to talking, and they're hanging out, and he decides he wants to impress her with some magic. So he's gonna transport them to Glastonbury, the legendary music festival. And when he pops out the other side, it turns out it looks a lot like Glastonbury, but everything's all weird and supernatural. It looks like they're in the dreaming and they're trying to figure out. And it's this world called Festival. And that's sort of this ongoing, perpetual music festival. If Glastonbury was had magical creatures and never ended. And then the other dude is also trying to get back there, apparently. And that's the setup for the story. And what I liked about it was that I'm not reading anything like this. That's an interesting take on things. It's you know, you've taken this magic character, you've put him into this context of a music festival that, you know, doesn't show up in comics all that often. And also the sort of last, I was actually surprised that we're 19 issues into this. The first, you know, 18 issues, there was always this, it was, you know, building this huge crisis, you know, like we'd like, oh, if there's the magic is going to do whatever. And it's always this huge crisis that goes on for 2 years. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is just going to be a story. You know, it feel, you know, it's going to be in and out and however many issues it takes. Could be 2 issues, could be 5, you know, whatever. You know, it's just a story. If you're a teenager with magic and you meet a girl who does magic and then you go to a rock show. And I thought, all right,
right,
I can get with that. You know, and at the same time, I've said this many times, Tom Fowler is one of the best artists in comics, and he got to draw a bunch of sort of monsters in this. That's what he does. If you look at his sort of like Instagram feed over, he draws monsters for fun. That's what he does. So they're all over this.
Yeah.
The you know, there's angry trolls are represented here as the folks at the show who aren't really good with other people. You know, it was just a weird, fun little issue that was not like any of the other things I was reading. And you know what? I really liked the voice that Barnett brought to it. It was a different feel than it had been before, and you know, a little more in line with, like, how do I put it this way? This is a world that you could see John Constantine coming in and out of, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which
well, he does, would. Doesn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly, exactly. It just fit that ethos a little more. It was like getting like.
But isn't he's in this? This is a part of that shared world. It's the Sandman
and
universe.
Yeah, and they mention him like he's an entity in this, but you know, it felt more like that kind of thing. And I liked it before, and I was enjoying it, but I think I liked this better.
Well, this is the second time you've picked this book.
Have I picked it before?
Yeah, Books of Magic number 14.
Well, there we go.
In December,
I've enjoyed it. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because this is one of those series that I actually have always wanted to read. But sort of going back and diving into the stuff that came out in the 90s was always just daunting. It was one of those, like, I'd like to do that someday. But in my mind, I thought, I never will. So when this series came out, you know, this is just like they got rid of Vertigo and then they basically relaunched two really good early Vertigo books. Like, there's a good Hellblazer book again. There's a good Books of Magic. There are other, you know, there's a Dreaming series that I didn't really get into, but I don't know, maybe Dreaming people love it. Like, it's so strange. They got rid of the branding, but then they made the same product. And if they just made that product with the branding, they might not have had that problem.
It's weird.
It's really weird. It's very, I was going to say it's very HBO Max. And then I thought, oh yeah, AT&T.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Yep.
All the same. Oh, I'm glad you liked it. I mean, Tom Fowler is terrific.
Yeah.
And I like that you like this book because it seems like it shouldn't be a book that you would like.
Yeah.
But well, I guess it does. It is.
We talk a lot about
this. It's not horror. It's not horror. No, it's more like.
Definitely not.
It's more like.
It's fantasy.
Constantine horror fantasy kind of thing.
Yeah. And I, you know, like we've talked a lot about not loving stuff that, you know, is like it looks like a normal concept and they're like, but there's wizards, you know, it's they work in a hot dog stand, but they're zombies, you know, and it isn't that. It just kind of is what it is. It's like these are magicians who are teens and you know, whatever. They're sort of people living in the real world. And it's not YA because it's earlier than that. Like it's that, I mean, it's like that. It's like British. There's a sensibility to it that I've always liked. And it, you know, I probably wouldn't go after something like this now had the concepts not been grandfathered in, if that makes sense. But they're fun. And also, you know, like comics are very same, you know, the superhero stories are what they are. You know, every other sort of indie comic is the, this meets that, you know, mashup Jaws in Space, you know, everything is trying to find that hook for TV, and these are just telling stories, and I there's something about that I think works really well for me.
Well, there you go.
There we are.
Books of Magic, 19.
Books of Magic.
I have no idea what I would have done, so I was glad it wasn't my week. I guess a case could have been made for the Avengers 33 from Jason Aaron and Javier Garon.
That was what I thought it was going to be,
but
it wasn't.
I also
like
had problems with it too. So yes. There was nothing I read this week where I was like, yes. I mean. Maybe Basket Full of Heads, but it would have been the same discussion we'd already had.
Yes.
But I really don't know what I would have done. So thank you for not being my week. So this was the start of a new arc, the Moon Knight versus the Avengers. And then this issue is all about Moon Knight methodically taking down several members of the Avengers and stealing their abilities. And I thought that was a fun concept. I had a problem with the art. First of all, it didn't help that Matteo Scalera did the cover, so it's going to make anything inside disappointing. But I thought that the beginning part with Iron Fist was really good. And then for some reason, I thought the art got worse as it went. And I thought the Thor section was pretty terrible.
I disagree. Only in the sense that, like, at the beginning, I thought, who is this? And it wasn't Ed McGuinness. And I know that. You know, this is sort of sacrilege, but I don't love the Ed McGuinness stuff on this. And this aesthetically was a lot more in line with what I do like. And I think that the first segment was good. And I think maybe at that point I was just hooked. And I noticed like when that Thor page shows up, I didn't love it. You're right. But I was kind of in at that point and wasn't really paying attention. I just sort of had gone along with it. But, you know, there were pages. That last page... you know, where Moon Knight is kneeling in front of Khonshu, like there's some really good stuff there. And I think,
there's definitely good stuff. It's just, it was just weird. Like I hated the way he drew Thor. There's one page, 17 where he's grimacing. It just doesn't look, I mean, I don't know who that is, but that's not Thor.
Okay. Yeah. I see.
It's just that part was bad. I like the rest of it though. I mean, the art wise, I really love the Iron Fist, the opening segment with Iron Fist in which we don't know what's happening. Iron Fist has been summoned to Kunlun, and by Moon Knight, and he's like, hey buddy, we both live in New York, why do we need to meet in Kunlun? And then they proceed to have a bendacy, you know, kung fu fight. I still love the device that he brought in which that you show the ridiculous movement names, and they use it actually for dramatic effect. Jason does here where Iron Fist is going to punch him with the Iron Fist of Shao Lao, and then the Fist of Khonshu is stronger, so and the words are on top of each other. Yeah. That was a nice
and
little lettering.
It's pretty much
device.
At first, it's just like every time Moon Knight would throw a punch, it's Fist of Khonshu. And then they added in a couple more, and I was like, no, don't do that. Like, make them all Fist of Khonshu. Like that, I thought that was a really fun device. And you're right. I also really like the fact that Danny's outfit is ridiculous, but I kind of love it. Like. It's like a skin tight tracksuit and the sneakers, and it's a little silly. I'm like, you know what? It works. I'm going with it. But I really love that Danny was like, it was a long time before he caught into what was happening.
Right.
You know, it's
hey,
funny.
Buddy.
He definitely, there's a little crossover between how they write Danny Rand and how they write Clint Barton these days.
Yeah.
They're a little interchangeable, but I like this more for Danny Rand than I do for Clint Barton. And I think it was the Iron Fist Power Man series by David F. Yeah. Walker. You know, he was he's a little breezy, you know?
He's just happy to be here, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, he's going to do a good job. He's competent, but he's not going to let it all get him down. You know, so overall, you know, I thought, oh, this is a different story. There's not like, oh yeah, don't forget Dracula. It's just we're doing an Avengers story, a lot like Books of Magic. Like let's just do this story, and I was happy about it. I did have a little bit of a 180 feeling on Mark Spector, and I know that he's got the personality disorder, whatever. We just came off whatever that last the Max Bemis story that we really liked, and then now there's this going on, and I know there's a twist. He's not a bad guy, but he's got to do this thing. And you know, this is classic superhero meets superhero, so they fight, and then in the end they'll come together or whatever. But I don't know. I felt a little like, no, don't do that to them, which I guess is intentional.
I mean, you don't like the hero versus hero, but I get that. But like, he's gathering the power to fight the devil. So he gets the Iron Fist. He gets the magic from Doctor Strange. He steals Ghost Rider's car, but then doesn't seem to have it later on. He gets Thor's hammer.
It's not even
steal anything from Black Panther, because Black Panther's power is himself, and there's nothing to steal.
The thing
I thought it was a nice little touch.
It was the thing that I think I didn't like. It was just that, like, we had gotten to know Mark Spector in this other context recently, and I liked that context. And all of a sudden, like, that was gone. It was as a different person, which I guess if you're gonna do it with anybody, you're gonna do it with the character with multiple personality disorder. I can't argue that. But I was like, oh man, where'd that other guy go? I had fun with that.
They also can't seem to figure out how to color his mask, because sometimes it was black, and then other times it was like at one point when at the end on page 20, he's got the hood down and the mask is still black, because before you think it was just a shadow, and then on the final page, when you turn the page, it's white again. It's like it kept changing colors.
See, I saw it in the context of those are different aspects of himself. Because like those are the different versions of Moon Knight, and that's why. So when he's in the suit, he's all white. Then when he's got the hood, he's, you know, the sort of classic black one. Like, he was changing his appearance based on the personality that was preeminent. That's the way that I took it.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it for sure.
Yeah, I just liked that it was a change of pace.
It was
from
a nice,
what's been happening.
Solid Avengers story. I honestly don't remember where we left off.
Me
before
neither.
This. I don't remember. It's been so long and a lot has happened.
But I liked that.
I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I liked it, but it was like, was it a pick of the week? Yeah.
No, I mean, gun to my head this week, maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, that's where I was leaning. But I mean, obviously, you know, like the review is, that was pretty good. Yeah. You know, that was good. That was a good time. But that's not like, man, this was a great issue. You know, it was a good start. It was fun. It was enjoyable. Which is the most you can ask of a comic book.
Yeah, that's true. We have the final issue of The Butcher of Paris, Butcher of Paris number 5, from Stephanie Phillips and Dean Kotz. So this is the true life story of a serial killer in Paris during the Nazi occupation of World War II. And it's tough, because we've been enjoying this series. One of the issues was Pick of the Week. But I felt like this issue covered too much ground
quickly.
Okay,
let's wrap it up.
And yeah, and admittedly, you and I are probably a significant portion of the readership, percentage-wise.
It's like 8.
But it needed to be probably 6 or 8 issues, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot of story here that just got sort of wiped away by this issue, where this basically he gets captured and then tried and executed all within 20 pages, and there's a lot of things that we just skip right over.
And the main detective, the old guy, like, he's got a whole like subplot that I felt like
they didn't do it at all, because he got arrested for being a Nazi collaborator because one of the Nazi officers wanted to screw him, so he said he was a collaborator, and that happens all off page.
Yeah, I was like, what is this?
Like, that was a big cliffhanger. He got arrested in the last issue, and then this issue, it's like a year later, and he's like, oh, that was all taken care of. It's like, what?
This is speculation, but this feels like, you know, I know we were going to give you 6, but we need to wrap it up in 5. which is, you know, business reality, but or, you know, relatively new writer. They didn't sort of stick the landing. I'd still recommend the series. I'm still glad I read it.
Oh, for sure.
But
interesting story. But like, I felt like this issue really, it was doing really well up until this point. And then I think this issue sort of, he just didn't stick the landing. And that's only because there was way more stuff in here than pages. Mm-hmm. Than it just needed more room, more storytelling.
And there could be all sorts of reasons for that I'm not, I don't know about. But yeah, because of that, like it felt lacking. You know, and mm-hmm. like I saw there was a new issue of that, and this is the one I was most excited about this week. I was like, oh, awesome. Right. You know, and I didn't hate it. I did not like it, but I was just a little like, oh, okay. All right, that's
disappointing.
That's,
I mean, because what was in here was pretty good. I mean, I don't know how true to life all this is in terms of him being the super charming guy in the courtroom that is funny and gets everybody on his side. And I assume
that was a stretch.
Well, it could have been true. That's why I don't know. And then obviously the dramatic flourish with the fictional detective who shows up, and that part was a little. It all seemed very real. This is a little too melodramatic for where the book has been, I think.
If there was historic precedent for that stuff, then it wasn't presented in such a way that I knew that. Largely, I guess it's just that it felt like a dramatic thing, but also I thought, well, maybe that happened. Like I've read stories where the horrible person is in court and the people are like, oh, he is so handsome though.
Oh yeah, it's happened, especially with serial killers who do. One of the things is they can be charming and make people laugh, and oh, he's not so bad, he's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a Perry Mason moment. I don't know, it was a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I still looked pretty good. I mean I liked how towards the end, page 29, the final page, where they're having sort of a confrontation, the art gets gets less polished, mm-hmm. as the tensions rise. I like the way this book looked a lot.
It captured the energy of the thing as you go through the end of it. However, you could also say it, you know, like as they're rushing to finish it, that all, it also kind of looked like that, except it worked, you know, graphically. Yeah. I don't know though.
I doubt that because it's the only page like that.
There's two. You know? There's was it? You said 29.
Right before the final page.
And 30. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then 27 is also like that.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know.
Maybe.
The big dramatic thing in the courtroom, we don't really see that part of it end. Next page is basically like, all right, credits.
Roll the credits, which I didn't necessarily mind, but
no, but it's still maybe this just needed 5 to 10 more pages. That might have been it. Maybe like an exercise
issue. That's a half an issue almost. Maybe it needed to be at least 6 issues. Mm-hmm. I think, but this issue should have been stretched out over 2.
Yeah, or I mean, like I said, like if it maybe was just a little longer, then the corners that were cut wouldn't have felt that way. You know, exercise final issue, something like that. But somewhere between those is the answer, I think.
And I understand, again, Josh and I are probably 10% of the audience. So
yeah.
I get you. I'm surprised this book was even made, and I'm happy it was.
And listen, we loved 85 to 90% of this.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Like you, I was excited to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Let's take a quick break to talk about NordVPN. Take control of your internet experience today with NordVPN. If you use the internet, and we know you do, you're listening to this show. I don't know how else you do it.
I have a guy, and I pay him to put this on vinyl for me.
Oh.
I don't know where he gets it.
Well, then you can sit down for a second. This is not for you.
Okay.
Then. Josh is a Luddite. You need to get yourself a top-of-the-line VPN to not only protect your privacy online, but unlock some pretty cool content. By using NordVPN, you'll get military-grade encryption and keep any prying eyes on your internet usage in the dark. So that's nice. We're all concerned with privacy right now. We're all concerned with everyone knowing everything that happens to us on the internet. This is a good way to keep things private. Not only are you protected, but if you turn on NordVPN, you can connect to one of their servers in over 60 countries, and it seems like you're in that country. Why is that good? I'll tell you what, Josh. Last year, I was in Europe on vacation.
Well, la-di-da.
During the end of Game of Thrones. Not for the finale, okay. But for like the second to last episode. And I was never going to avoid spoilers if something major happened. And so a VPN was very helpful in allowing me to watch the whole episode as everyone else did. And so you can do that too with a VPN service.
You are all about the shared cultural moment.
Yeah, I also didn't want to get spoiled for the show I've been watching for 8 years.
That's a good point.
So maybe you want to watch the BBC iPlayer for some British content, or maybe you want to use Netflix as if you were in Japan to get some amazing anime content. NordVPN is the way to do that. Some other great aspects of NordVPN that make using it easy include NordVPN's Chrome browser extension is lightweight and user-friendly from the first click. It secures your browsing in seconds. Android and iOS apps to secure your mobile browsing experience. Unlimited bandwidth for up to 6 simultaneous connections. Risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee, and 24/7 customer support, live chats, emails. So, what's the offer? Right now, you can get 70% off a 3-year plan plus one additional month for free when you go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy or use code ifanboy. This special offer makes your subscription just $3.49 per month.
That's very reasonable. That's a very reasonable number.
For encryption protection and also international access to content, that's a great number. I mean, that's less than one comic book.
I was waiting for them to be like, you know, $20 a month. We'll get it down to 15. And I went, oh, that's doable. That's a doable number. And I can see benefits to that. The security alone.
Less than the price of any one of these comic books we're talking about. It gets you all those services. So that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy to take control of the internet.
You know what's always nice to come back to in comics is Ryan Otley. It's always, yeah. You know, like every time I get a Spider-Man, I'm pretty happy about Amazing Spider-Man. Then I see it's an Otley issue and I go, oh, all right. Like it feels like a treat. It feels like one of your lesser holidays. Like it's not Christmas.
It's definitely a treat. But this arc has been a treat by him.
Yeah.
The Amazing Spider-Man 43, Nick Spencer, Ryan Otley. I will say this. The only negative I had is clearly Otley shouldn't ink himself.
He didn't
because
fully.
He inked himself on the last three pages.
Oh, is that
and,
what it
and so it's Cliff Rathburn has regular inker throughout the most of the issue, and then the last three pages are Otley. Yeah, it's just a different look. It's angular and rougher. It's not bad. Actually, I take it back. It's not that he's shitting himself. It's just it's a very different looking kind of Otley. And it was a little bit of a whiplash from the clean and polished Rathburn inks to his rougher inks.
Well, I'm going to turn this around on you in that I think one of the things that maybe, without fully understanding it, that I like about Otley is that he's kind of an old style artist. Like he does, as far as I can remember, pretty fully rendered pencils, you know, yeah. And then the inker, which is who's Cliff Rathburn. I think he inked most, if not all of Invincible.
Yeah.
He adds something to it. You know, he adds something to it the way that Terry Austin added to John Byrne. And without him, John Byrne is not as good. Or, you know, presumably Mark Farmer and Alan Davis. Or
yep.
The list goes on and on. Paul Mounts and,
Mark
and Brian
Morales,
Hitch.
Paul Martin Mounts, Moore, yeah.
Transmetropolitan. Anybody who inks Derek Robertson is infinitely more appealing to me when somebody else is inking him in a certain way that just brings out everything that's great about him. And I think maybe Ryan Otley is one of those guys. And I don't
They're not just tracers.
Yeah, no, but and I don't even mean to like I don't think that's a weakness on the part of Otley. It's just how he works best. You know, like a guy in a band who has a really great bass player, that is a better band as opposed to him just playing on it. You know, actually, you know what? This is very specific, but Dinosaur Jr. is one of my favorite bands. Lou Barlow is a bass player who doesn't sound anything like anybody else. And Jay Maskus has done albums where either he's playing the bass or somebody else is. And it's just, it's not as good. The embellishment of the other thing makes the main part stronger. And I think that that is probably a Ryan Otley thing. And I love that. I want inkers back. You know, like economically, whatever. I think inkers make things better.
If this is how he's always had been drawing, like I wouldn't necessarily dislike it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I kind of like the rougher style on its own in its own universe, but when you compare it to what the Rathburn pages look like, it's like night and day. Mm-hmm. So that's all. And there's only a couple of pages. I don't know who knows why it happened, but
so
you know this arc about the little
God.
Creature. It was nice. I mean this issue wasn't as good as the last one.
No, and I think
that
that's,
broke our heart. But,
yeah, I think that's the problem. Yeah. The art really was the first bit with the sort of giant monster fighting in the streets was like that was excellent. really excellent.
His facial expressions on is it GOG?
GOG.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. GOG.
Like Magog in DC.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Just the he draws him like a dog, like the joy. He's got joy in his face. But I'm looking at page 12 when they realize he's playing fetch with boomerangs, and he's just so happy to be playing. Mm-hmm. And I just like it's amazing cartooning from Ryan Otley and Cliff Rathburn.
True, and the thing being though that. Was it a great story of an issue? No, not really. No. It kind of ended. I was like, wait, that was the whole thing. So it was really more looking at the art and then sort of feeling that emotion. That was the strength of it, you know? And now he's going to have a weird little pet. And I was like, oh, this is like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There's a porg now.
It is actually kind of a weird, I mean, it's not, you know, so Peter lives with Boomerang and Robbie Robertson's kid. So it's sort of this, it's not as quite as fun if Robbie instead of Robbie was another superhero or villain, then it would be this weird kind of take on that, which would have been fun. But they're also watching The Walking Dead on TV.
GOG is no Mrs. Lion. Ms. Lion.
Ms. Lion saved the day all the time.
Ms. Lion, I don't think, has Ms. Lion ever been canon in actual Marvel comics, though, is the question.
I don't want to put a stake in the ground and say no, because I feel like maybe.
I mean, so it must have happened. It's been almost 40 years. It must have happened at some point. Let's move along to Basketful of Heads number 7. This was a week of endings, it turns out.
Of series we've been really enjoying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't, it's like seven and five are weird numbers to end a series on. Like
I could have made the case for this as pick of the week because I thought the ending was strong. But only in the era in which we don't write 1,000 words on the pick of the week, because I would have nothing left to say about it.
And that was literally, I thought the ending was pretty good. I felt like I was missing something, but I'm not sure.
It ended on
a
classic twist. So
yes, yeah, that was good too.
Junie was the cliffhanger was Junie was tied up and tied to an anchor and tossed in the water. She's the classic blonde 80s female heroine, and the corrupt cops in town caught her, threw her in the water with an anchor. She frees herself, and with the help of the magic Norse axe she's been carrying around and beheading people with, and gets back and ends up saving the day. But we find out this whole time she's been assuming that her boyfriend, what's his name? Whatever his name, Liam.
Liam. He's a good Liam. Guy. He's the good one in this, isn't he?
He is the new summer hire deputy because they get those summer dollars. And we've been assuming Liam is the guy who's been leaking information about their criminal activities of the police department to the FBI. He's a good guy. And it turns out here he actually, while not as bad as the other cops, wasn't quite the guy she thought he was. And in fact, wasn't the source of the leak and used and did take some of the money that the other cops took to buy a car, to buy an engagement ring for her. He may not have been a drug dealer. He may not have murdered people, but he certainly wasn't the hero she thought he was. And it turns out it was the maid who lived in the house that was the source of the information.
I think the other thing that's kind of cool is that by the end of this, Junie had, like, she might have forgiven this earlier on, but by the end, she had had enough of these assholes.
She had a really bad night. This is all takes place over the course of basically one day. It's just not a good day to find out your boyfriend took some money as a cop.
Yeah. You know what I really liked about this? This is the Super Dune Buggy Beetle. That is my favorite car in comics right now. For me, this was enjoyable. Again, it's a book that's sort of outside of our wheelhouse of something that we would read, but good is good. Yeah.
The thing is, it wasn't really because it's basically an 80s movie. I mean, the horror element was really just that the
gore. I don't know. Like, I'm sure
it wasn't real. It's almost a comedy because the way that the head, you know, she would cut people's heads off with this axe, but because it was this magical Viking axe, they stayed alive. And that was mostly played for laughs. It was like this weird kind of like a horror comedy.
I'm guessing that horror people can subdivide all this stuff into very specific genres is my guess. This is like a Sam Raimi. It's something like that kind of thing, but you can hear you can hear the squelching sound effect. Like, it's horror, it's R-rated, you know, when she's cutting the stuff off. For me though, that one of the big stories here is who the single named Leo Max, whoever that is, right. You know, that pseudonym or whatever it is that's going on. But I don't know where this person came from, but I'm very excited to see more from this artist.
That's true. I'm just want to back up and say, I guess Liam was involved in the death of that girl.
Mm.
He didn't kill her, but he was involved with the other cops. So he turned out to be, I would say, 80% as bad as the other guys.
Okay. I honestly don't remember that story.
Well, I was trying to figure out why she was justified cutting his head off. And I'm looking back over the dialogue, and he was there, and he had some bad words to say about her.
He let her jump, basically. Or he pushed her? No, he didn't. So push her. I don't know.
He got his comeuppance too. So at the end of the day, Junie drives off with the maid
and the badass beetle.
Whatever, it was fun.
Jump
some
dunes in that bad boy.
it was a lot of Jaws references. It was really fun.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. So those are all the books we wanted to talk about. I struggled to add more books to the rundown. Other comics came out. Not a lot to say about them. So let's jump right to the patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Anyone who's a patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. Second week in a row, it's a wire-to-wire winner with Star Wars Dr. Aphra number one.
So it's a forced Star Wars corner.
Forced Star Wars corner, you're yep. Right. Written by Alyssa Wong, art by Marcia Cresta, colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, and letters by Joe Caramagna. This book was released digitally back on May 4th for Star Wars Day, but was officially released this week to comic stores and the such. So this was the official release week.
Now, I have a couple of questions for you.
Yes.
You've been a record. You're not into the Star Wars comics or whatever. What do you know about Dr. Aphra?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I know you talking about her on the show that she's like an archaeologist. That's all I know.
She's like a rogue archaeologist.
Morally gray archaeologist.
Yes. She's what you picture Han Solo was like before he met Luke, basically. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Much more murky. Really interesting character. You really struggle with whether you like her or not, whether you want good things to happen or not, but there's something charming about the character, I think. She's working with Vader for a little while. She's got Vader against her for a little while. Created by Kieran Gillen in the Darth Vader series. Clearly a breakout success from that. They went on and did the series. That series was taken over by Cy Spurrier. That is when I dropped off, when he started doing that.
Right.
And so what we have here is another relaunch. This has to be the second, maybe the third Dr. Aphra series having a number one, at least second. This is Alyssa Wong, a writer I haven't heard of. I sort of looked her up, and she's done some comics, and she's written a lot of short stories. Pretty young. The art by Marcia Cresta, I've never heard of her. It was fine. So what's your take?
I like the cover. Cover by Valentina. Where is it? I'm looking to the credits page. I know Valentina was the name. Valentina Reminar. Mm-hmm. Real good. That's as good. That's about all positive I can say about this.
Did you make it through?
I struggled to finish it. I put it down like four times.
It was not good.
No, it was not good.
It was not good. And the problem with this... I feel like apologizing.
I thought the art was not good either. But it may have been the color. It may have been the colors more than the art. Well, Rachel Rosenberg's good colors. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
that the problem with this book that it was astonishingly average, bland. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Bad. It's just that I just explained a lot about Dr. Aphra, who is a character full of nuance. And
none of that was in the book.
None of that was present. It was just like, hey, we're a crew. We've got these people around. Oh, this is my old acquaintance. What's going to happen here? Here's my other old acquaintance. Everything was very, I was like, oh, this is like every episodic genre TV episode before that was a popular thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the syndicated genre TV shows that would appear like on Fox during the afternoons on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Just
it just represented the things I don't like about Star Wars extended stuff for the most part. It's just a lot of Star Wars gobbledygook said by characters I don't know or care about. So I just don't know or care about anything. I had no reason to. It read like you had to know Dr. Aphra, because nothing in here told me to care about her or know anything about her. And so then I was left with a bunch of long Star Wars names and words and places and things and legends of ghosts. And I was just like, I don't care about any of this. I mean, I've talked before, like, you know, I like Star Wars. Obviously, I love Star Wars, but I prefer a very specific type of Star Wars story. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly about the Skywalkers and the Force and the battle for the Republic. And the rest of it on the fringes, unless it's really well done, like The Mandalorian, I just don't really care about.
Well, I mean, the thing is this, is that part of the problem here is, I mean, this is, it's fine, but the character as conceived and the stories that were weaved around her by Kieran Gillen to begin with were really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, like everything that I've described, like everything you said, I wouldn't want to read this either if you told me about it. But that Kieran Gillen stuff was excellent. Not only that, it was drawn by Salvador La Roca, whose art I don't like, and it was still really good. She's a very ambiguous character. There's a lot of Constantine about her, I guess, to bring up something I talk about all the time, in a very charming way. And the threat, the stakes for her in those initial stories were very high. And really well done. Her two sidekicks were an R2-D2 C-3PO, evil psychopath killer bots. And they were funny, but also dangerous. And like her Wookiee, the Black Krigerstistin, you know, like he was weird and funny in that. And now it's just all normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It felt like the new characters came in. It was all a bit of a fashion show. Like they weren't interesting designs. It looks like a boring Wildstorm book.
Yeah. It just I this book's only, you know, 20 pages, and I it took me 4 tries to finish it. I was reading it, I was like, when is this gonna be over?
He's hating this, but but you're not wrong. I don't know if you thought I was gonna be like, oh yeah, no, this was it, like. You know, I dropped off. I was like, okay, I really like those Dr. Aphra stories. I've had enough. It's not like I'm going to be like, oh, I'm following this character until in every story she shows up in. Because I think it's very hard to make it work. And Kieran Gillen has a singular talent in some of these kinds of things. And I don't like everything he does, but when he does something well, he does it really well. And I don't think you can keep up with that. Cy Spurrier is a guy who also has a very specific voice, and I think he fit in with it well. But even that, I was like, all right, it's fine. Like, I have my part.
Which is interesting, because he writes a really terrific Constantine.
It's true. That's the thing I've liked his absolutely best. I don't know why. It's just that when he gets to...
sometimes things work.
For Spurrier, I think that he has a massive imagination, and he's a person who throws a bunch of stuff at the wall, you know, and it's really impressive and big, but I find it tiring. Constantine... there's a very rigid, rigid format. There's an area that you have to stick in. And because of that, he's focused, you know, and he's not trying to impress you with his cool space ideas. But this is a problem for somebody. That's a problem for Warren Ellis, you know. Anyway.
Well, I'm looking at the back page, which is the ads for the other Star Wars books. And you didn't like, did you read Bounty Hunters? Did you not like it?
I read the first issue, maybe the second. That's Ethan Sachs. But
yeah, you didn't like it. You panned it.
I think I did. But, you know, also, just, you know, that is what it is. And I'm not that market. Same way that you're not. You know, I don't even know that it was bad. I just kind of didn't care. I don't remember. I don't think I'm reading Darth Vader. Oh, right. Because it's Padme, but it's not Padme. It's Keira Knightley, Sabe. And I was like, yeah, not super interested. Star Wars number 5. Somebody's writing it. Is it Greg Pak now?
I hope somebody's writing it.
No, I mean, like, somebody I'm familiar with. I think I'm still reading the main Star Wars issue. You know what? I hate that they renumbered that one. I really liked that, like, there was a Star Wars comic that had been, you know, in the I don't know, in the high double digits, maybe. Maybe it was the 40s or 50s or something like.
Yeah, it was.
Let that go, man. That's so cool. I don't know why that's I know why it's a problem for sales or whatever, but like, geez, I miss that. Like now when you look at, what are we, Spider-Man 43, I thought, wow, 43 issues of Spider-Man. That's rad.
It's actually 844.
I know that, but like, I'm sorry. I don't want to get into a numbering thing, but it really bothered. I remember thinking how cool it was when I was a kid, like that Thor was in 300, and I would think, yeah, so you divide that by 12. Holy cow. Like, I loved that. And it's all gone.
It's all gone. Can't get it back like our faded youth.
I know.
Let's rate and review. We already reviewed it. Let's rate Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 1 out of 5 stars. Ratings.
2.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1.5.
That makes sense.
That was pretty bad.
I just think it was astonishingly average. Like, it wasn't like bumbling. It was just like, this exists.
I think it was but for me, it's more annoying because it's Star Wars. Like, sure. I don't want to read astonishingly average gobbledygook Star Wars stories. You know, for years, the batting average for Star Wars was exceptionally high.
Yeah.
And now we've diluted it down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a bummer for me.
There were a lot of Dark Horse comics for a lot of years, though. Could be categorized.
I'm talking about even before all that
stuff. Yeah,
you know.
I said those novels probably spoiled me for extended universe stuff. And even that,
those early ones were terrific.
Yeah, and even that I stopped. Like, as soon as I wasn't sure, I was like, nope, I'm out. Like, I don't want to corrupt it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm out
on this stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, which I forgot to prepare for.
Well, so, I've written some thoughts there. That's 2 a.m. I was like, I don't know if I'll think of anything now. But
I was surprised to see your notes in the script. It's like, Josh's notes for the patron. Anyway, let's thank Gallius. Gallius?
Yeah.
Gallius.
Do you want me to go first?
No, I got one.
Okay.
It's not going to be good. But I got one.
With all these patrons, I felt intimidated. Because the patron count's gone up, and I was like, oh, man. I was kind of coasting at the end.
What was it? 650 patrons. It's just incredible. Thank you. And that's just current ones. I'm counting all the ones that have come and gone. May have had this power before, but that's okay. Gallius can instantly dry clothing. So
does he just live in a hot, dry climate?
No, he just touches clothes and it's dry. Like,
Does he only own technical fabrics?
He doesn't have to worry about going out in the rain.
Right.
When he gets where he's going, he just dries his clothes. Although he might still get pneumonia.
Does it dry his skin? Because that can lead to chafing.
Right. It's still pneumonia, chafing, other problems you could get. But, he doesn't have to worry about having a clothing dryer. Mm-hmm. He can just wash his clothes.
Nice.
That's good for the environment because the dryers take up a lot of energy and things. So, he can just walk down the line and touch all the clothes and they'll be dried.
Nice. He's good for the environment. Yeah, that's perfect.
He dries fabric with a touch.
Cool. Jesse Lysons can shrink any object up to a quarter of an inch. So, say for example, have you ever tried like a project and you need to get something in somewhere and it just won't go? It's supposed to fit in here up to 1/4 inch. Get that thing in there. He can bring it back up afterwards. Say, I don't know, just for example, you were trying to find a window air conditioner of 12,000 BTU and up, and the minimum requirement for window is 5.5 inches, and yours is 5 3/8 inches. Just as a random example. And you have to wonder, should I buy this, or am I going to have to send it back because of 1/8 inch?
Right.
Not a problem for Jesse License.
Up to 1/4 inch.
Up to 1/4 inch per side. So like your dimension is...
Oh.
So say it's like the object is 8x10. He can bring it down to 7 3/4 by 9 3/4. And also into the third dimension too. This does not apply to the fourth dimension in space-time.
I see.
Okay.
All right, so there you go. Gallius and Jesse Lyons, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy.
You ever try to frame something and there's a little bit at the end that doesn't fit for some reason?
Mm-hmm. Shrink it down.
Yeah. That brings us to patreon.com/iFanboy. This is the way that you can help support the show. And we had just mentioned to it, but know that we are dumbfounded. We are Just flattered and humbled and so thankful and grateful for the help that people, and I know this sounds like a made up thing, but I really am. And it makes us think, oh God, we really have to do a good job with that because it's important to people. And they're showing us that by becoming patrons and supporting the show and all the different ways that you do. And thank you so much. And, you know, because of it, we're doing our Media Splode show. We got a new one of those coming out soon. We are, you know, I've been doing the Talk Splodes. We've been doing the Book Splodes. I mean, you know, putting the video shows up. All of that stuff is happening because people came along and supported the show. And especially now, like it, you know, this is our second job. This is my other job, and it's significant. And it makes me, you know, it's much easier to devote the time to it because of this. So anyway, that's that. Our next stretch goal is for quarterly barbecue video shows. However, that's supposed to work, but I guess that will be a problem to solve if folks come through for that. So there we go. You can also, lots of other ways. You can go over to the t-shirt store. iFanboy.threadless.com, where you can buy up to eight. There's eight designs that you can put on t-shirts, 3/4 length baseball shirts, sweatshirts. Now there are masks. We got some masks going that are available for purchase right now. The newest design is the Stay Home and Read Comics shirt or mask. Half the proceeds from those shirts is going to go to the Comic Book United Fund. Additionally, if you buy a mask from Threadless, their portion of their proceeds are also going to go to a fund that I do not remember right now, but you will see it if you're on ifanboy@threadless.com. So a lot of that goes to a good cause. And also, those masks look pretty cool.
They're cool. And the fact of the matter is that wearing masks is not going away anytime soon. And yeah. So the designs, we had not all of our designs, Stay Home and Read Comics, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, Herm, iFanboy logo, and the Electro, one is Electro. And the Herm in particular looks pretty awesome.
the Herm is rad.
Lines across the mouth.
Yeah. The Electro one, cool. Actually, you know what? All those have something great about them. Nothing makes it like, you know, if people could come near you, they would be a conversation starter. But as they can't, they probably will just look like a blurry thing. But you'll know, and that's what's fine. If you don't want to deal with any of that, but you're like, how can I help? You can go to ifanboy.com/support, and you'll find a direct donation link to, via PayPal. You will also be able to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you'll find a general link to Amazon. So if you're buying the things that you need and you go through that, that helps us out. There's also links to buy the books in our Booksplode, and there's always a link to the music that we use on the show if you want to get on that too. So
before we move on, I just want to mention Elijah is one of our listeners, and he sent photos in. He got shirts for him and his daughter, who's his little daughter is little, and I guess they do baby size shirts, which is cool because he sent us pictures of his daughter Emerson wearing the Herm shirt. It's really awesome.
That's fantastic.
It's really cool. I'm not going to publicize it because I don't like putting up people's children's photos online without their permission. But he's wearing the Stay at Home Read Comic shirt, and she's wearing the little Herm shirt. And there's a picture of her playing with her toys wearing the Herm shirt, and it's pretty great.
That is fantastic. So, it's what's also good about it is in no way related to any corporately owned projects.
If you want to introduce your little children to nihilism, the little Herm shirt is pretty great. Let's do
tease for Tire Trek burst on a dog's stomach.
Joe Corner. Unfortunately, Ron had a family emergency and had to drop out right before the show started. But we're going to soldier on with Adam as we talk about Battle.
By the way, he'll be just fine. You don't have to.
Yeah, not like a medical emergency. He just had something he had to deal with. Really, you know, he's got twins. So
twin babies.
Babies. So
it's all an emergency. It's all a fire at that point.
Battle on the Roof of the World, which is The Revenge of Cobra, Part 4, the penultimate chapter, originally, is this information correct? Originally aired September 13th, 1984?
Yes. Well, I added one to the previous one. I assumed that if Part 3 aired on the 12th, then 4 was the 13th. I did make the guess on that, but I think it holds.
Directed by Dan Thompson, written and produced by Ron Friedman for Marvel Productions. And this is, as I said, the penultimate chapter of The Revenge of Cobra story. As things get spicy in this one, there's a lot of fighting.
It was wall to wall action again.
So the cliffhanger, as we talked about last time, was the earthquake, which caused the ground below Shipwreck and Gung Ho, and I thought also Lady J to crumble, but she didn't fall. Only Shipwreck and Gung Ho fell into the crevasse, but luckily Lady J carries a spear with a net. So she's like Green Arrow, throws the spear
with it shoots a net across the crevasse. A very narrow net. It was a large margin for error, I noticed.
Also,
and she
narrow,
said,
but
there's only one way to do this. And I was like, I don't think that's the best way.
It was very narrow, but the tensile strength of that net, the amount of weight it could handle was truly incredible, considering it wasn't like the spear went that deep into the stone.
Well, you would hope so. Well,
two giant dudes, one of whom is gung-ho, who's got to weigh like 280 pounds of muscle. Mm-hmm. They land no problem on this net. And not only that, but then Shipwreck throws his little grappling hook into this, not very deeply into the stone, pulls on it to sort of propel them. And I thought, wow, the strength of this net is incredible.
Well, let's talk a little about Shipwreck's grappling. First of all, Shipwreck, I don't know if you know this, but you had a grappling gun with you.
Right,
that
right.
Shot a hook. One that I don't know if you know how grappling guns work, but the it's sort of like a fish hook. And the idea would be that the hook part would grab onto something, not Shipwreck's. Shipwreck's
right.
Burrowed directly into the rock, which hooked on nothing, but was enough to shoot them back up. And then and I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but there's a bit where they're standing there at the end where Gung Ho in his vest comes and puts on his hand on Shipwreck, and I thought that is super gay. And
I thought,
did they know that? And then I thought, they didn't know that, but people definitely knew that. Like,
what's also interesting, and I didn't even notice till now, is looking at the shot of, as, you know, the earthquake takes out the land, the other Joes are in the middle of, like, island, because the area all around them breaks. So mm-hmm. How did they get off of that?
Listen.
They should all be stranded.
That's
none
true.
None of them have jetpacks.
So moving along, we've got a hovercraft versus, I don't remember what those Cobra vehicles are called, but I remember I loved them. They're shooting at each other on either end of the horseshoe that was the island. And the way out of this is they each release a smoke screen. And to
my
which,
notes say smoke fight.
And the Cobras are baffled by this. They have all the technology in the world, all sorts of things. They're like, they're gone. And so like, we'll go too. But they continue firing at each other. And neither have changed position. And
No.
I'm not a soldier, but I know a couple
their
of things.
Guns are already trained on them. They're still there.
and then the third element here is that Zartan
yes.
and the Dreadnoughts in their high-tech submarine that is clearly, you know, if they can afford the submarine, they may not need to do all this. there's a resource allocation issue there. They decide they want to be the third element in this whole thing, which I remember as a kid I loved. I thought, oh.
Sure.
Wow. We don't know what to think of them. Yeah, the chaos element.
Well, what's interesting is we see Zartan looking through the periscope and he's surrounded by his three Dreadnoughts. There must be other Dreadnoughts we don't see because someone's piloting the submarine.
Yeah, and also the three existing Dreadnoughts, I don't trust their maritime ability.
No.
I really don't. Like, I do not believe they could work that ship. I believe
they're
Zartan could. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also want to know why Zartan's voice is always doubled. How does he do that? he's always got a slight slapback.
I want to know what the
Dreadnoughts smell like. I don't.
Because they probably smell horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Everything just smelled like cigarettes then, as far as I could tell. I think it was just all cigarettes.
Yeah, that's true.
And that leads us to, I mean, I think the most interesting part of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's a habit. Episode. Yeah.
We call comics episodes and TV yep, shows
totally.
Issues.
Storm Shadow and Spirit resume their battle. They have been caught in an underground river.
Green
War. But, you know, like, and again, I had said it excited me that Zartan represented the third element. This blew my mind when I was a kid. The respect
sure.
for your enemy bit that happens throughout this whole episode between Storm Shadow and Spirit.
First, they have to work together to not drown
yes.
because they're floating with the piece of the weather dominator. And so they do that, and then they get up on the land.
Without words,
and,
though, they carry it together. They put it down. Yeah. It's great.
And then they get on the land, and it's like, well, we could fight, but
they
let's
do for a little bit. You know, they sort
fight
of
for a second.
They bow to each other.
Like, this is dumb. And let's think about it. So they both sit down and meditate on their situation. They're also running out of air.
That's why the fight couldn't go on.
But it's just interesting that in 1984 we have these two heroes stop to meditate on their situation.
Well, let's also remember that given the time, this was the ninja craze, and so.
Oh, for sure.
You know, part of the thing was Americans trying to come to terms with this sort of more Eastern philosophy. And while Spirit is a tornado of racial stereotypes, there is beneath it an attempt at respect for a culture. And I think that's what we're getting here, is that, like, hey, these two people seem to be more thoughtful than the other people, than Gung Ho. How would this work? And it's pretty damn progressive for what this show was, I think.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think G.I. Joe in general is more progressive than people realize.
I think so.
Because underneath the very easy racial and ethnic and national stereotypes, there's at least they're all being portrayed. You know, there's almost as many non-white characters as white characters in 1984.
It's kind of obvious what they're doing, they did try to give everybody a thing. So, you know, yeah. Roadblock talks jive, also a gourmet chef. So, right. You know, it's definitely an attempt. And I think that it's hard to think that this kind of stuff didn't affect people like you and me.
Yeah.
You know, and how they did.
So here's the next thing we see is the aforementioned Roadblock with her name?
With Optimus Prime. That is Optimus fucking Prime. Wait, it's funny.
Honda Lou West.
I'd forgotten it. She said it again. I was like, Honda Lou. Honda. All right, go for it.
She must have that hat pinned to her hair, by the way. It never comes off. They're in the back of the Cobra truck in the caravan. They've stolen Honda Lou's trucks and taken to the base in the desert. Where is the base?
I mean,
where is Cobra High School? It's in, like, the middle of what looks like the Sahara Desert, but clearly must be somewhere in the United States.
I think the Joes are somewhere like in Arizona, and I think this is like down the road. I think they built their bases like, you know,
nearby. Didn't realize it was.
Or, you know.
We're only a mile from Joes.
Damn it. And, which leads into a scene, by the way, and I tried to look this up, but I could not find an answer. Destro, in this scene between him and Cobra Commander, says, "My dear Cobra Commander," for what might be the first time. Because I didn't notice it in any of the other episodes. My dear Cobra Commander. He does it.
At first, he's talking to himself because no one else is in the room.
Yeah.
So he's a little loony, too. So then we got back to Spirit and Storm Shadow, which is the highlight of this whole episode. And as they realize, they have to work together to get out of this cave. It's running out of air. Although there's a ton of room in the cave for air. It's not like they're in a tiny cave. So they have to float out with the piece. There's some dodgy not say physics, but in terms of, like, there's air trapped underneath the piece of the device, but I don't know how that would be possible because it's floating at the top. But
and it doesn't seem to have it doesn't seem to have a cutout in it.
No, it's not curved to trap air. It's flat in the bottom, so I don't know. So anyway, so they work together to free themselves, and then. In the course of that, Spirit saves Storm Shadow's life, and so Storm Shadow now owes him a life debt, and so he gives him the piece to run off with. And Spirit turns out to be the best rock climber in the world.
Oh, not only can he strong
climb fast, but he can climb while holding this giant piece that required him and Storm Shadow previously to carry.
He's become stronger while being oxygen deprived.
So that leads to Zartan and the Dreadnought showing up to try to steal the device.
Hold on. So he's chased then by a bunch of blue shirts and Firefly. Firefly may be my favorite G.I. Joe design at the time. Because everybody liked Storm Shadow, but I was like, yeah, but look at this guy. Because I always thought that the gray urban camo or whatever that is looked rad. And so he was like a ninja, but that had that. And also he was a badass, I think.
And also his solution for everything was to throw a grenade at it.
Sure.
All he does in the show is just throw grenades at things.
It's fine.
And this is where I think we have the first example of obvious death on the show, which is not addressed, in which the blue shirts get blown off the rock by the Dreadnoughts and Zartan, and it's not like they parachute away. They fall down in the avalanche
and the
into
ocean,
the sea.
The water was heated up because of the volcano, so it was dangerous, which is why I assume they couldn't just drive the hovercraft away.
Right. So he kills those Cobra troops. And then There's a lot of questionable fashion on this show, but at one point, and I'm trying to figure out find where it is in the show, but the Baroness shows up and she's wearing some sort of weird headdress, which I've never seen before.
It's her flight helmet.
It's just weird looking.
She got into the plane and she didn't have it. And then the Cobra helmet's a problem. Like the Major Blood helmet, that creeps me out. That's like it reminds me of the, you know, in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the French soldiers' helmets that make them look like penis helmets. That's what Major Blood's helmet looks like. And that's what Baroness's like decorated helmet looked like.
Not good. No. Doesn't inspire fear.
Well,
ridicule. Roadblock and Honolulu get into the Cobra base. They almost kidnap Cobra Commander, which I thought, oh god, they're doing this again, but it didn't end up happening.
Wait, why did any of that happen? He shows up.
I don't know. Didn't
they beat him up? And then I was like, all right, they're gonna take him back. That makes sense. And then they just didn't. I was like, why did you even show yourselves if you were just leaving?
I mean, it allowed us to have the great scene in which Roadblock hoists Cobra Commander over his head and then tosses him at a group of troops, which is hilarious. But
that is good. That's enough reason.
But then the Cobra troops get up and they're all armed with guns. And instead of shooting Roadblock, one of them uses the gun as a club to club Roadblock.
They're not.
These are not well trained soldiers.
They're not good marksmen. They know it. They're playing to their strengths. In close quarters, whack that guy because you'll probably miss.
So then, the highlight, the emotional highlight is the Spirit Snake, Storm Shadow fight. But then the real highlight from my memory was the game of hockey.
Oh, they got to the ice and I went, oh, it's hockey time. I also specifically remember being excited. I don't remember the name of the snowmobile, but I had one. Mm-hmm. And I had snow job, and to this day, I'm like, they must have known that it rhymes with blow job. But there was a real thing called a snow job, but I can't. How does that fly? How did somebody in marketing at Hasbro go, whoa, 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 or Kenner, whatever it was then? Kenner was Star Wars. Hasbro was these guys.
Well, I mean, snow job is like it's like a con. It doesn't make any sense for. I mean, there's also a sexual thing.
But no, it rhymes with blowjob, and the word blowjob existed in 1983 and was well known.
Oh, I'm not saying it didn't. I'm just saying it was also the word for like you're snowing someone. It's a
I know,
con, but
like there's a word for a rooster is a cock, and you wouldn't call the guy big cock. No, he's like a chicken though. Yeah, but he's big cock. No, again though.
Depends how much cocaine the marketing department had done that day.
That's true.
He's just excited because now there's a snowy element. He's just waiting. He's been in the background while they've been in the tropics.
The point is, I was excited about those because I had those toys, and whenever one of my toys showed up that I can do this scene now. I was thrilled about it.
So I don't know about the biology or the environmental, truthfulness of the sluice. Tracks they use to get into where the thing is from the hot springs, but
I know glacier toboggans are not a thing.
He gives them glacier toboggans, which are not powered. So hopefully it's all downhill. And Gung Ho and Shipwreck just cannot pilot theirs at all. They just keep spinning, and they use the same exact footage twice.
Yep.
Where the first two are just shooting down this track, and then Gung Ho and Shipwreck are just spinning around. Going off the walls, they can't handle it. But then that leads to they're all inside this sort of natural hockey rink where there's ice walls all around and a big ice sheet, and the disc shaped piece of the weather dominator is there. As the Joes arrive on one side and Cobra Rise on the other side, they all somehow have skates to attach to their boots, and they start playing hockey with
the skates. Is the real big thing here where everyone was skating.
Really Destro, good at it.
Yeah, Destro was skating. Gung Ho, you wouldn't think he'd be a great skater, but there he goes. He can do it. All the blue shirts and crimson guards, they're skating. You'd think, snow job, he could skate, obviously. That's not a thing. Sure. And then they start, and I thought, wait a minute, how do they? Oh, they use their guns. They use their, and Spirit and Storm Shadow both skate. I don't think Storm Shadow skates.
It seems risky to not. You know, what if your first shot, instead of moving the piece like a hockey puck, blew it up? Like, you don't know. You're shooting a laser gun at it.
They cover all of these things. Like, the tech guys, like, just before we go, if we shoot it and it's on ice, well, no, you're fine with that. Don't worry about it. It's not the big blocky one, right? No, it's not that one. It's the sort of puck-shaped one. Oh, no, that one, shoot. It glows. It's fine.
I feel like it kept changing size, too.
That you didn't feel wrong. You were correct about that. But that was...
It was like it got really big at one point.
Size variability, not unlike our earlier patron power. Size variability was a big thing with this show, and especially with Transformers, which was sort of happening at the same time, the same thing. Like, that did not matter. Size changed depending on what the scene sort of... I'm guessing, like, the first few episodes or so, they were like, wait, these sizes are all over the place. And they'd go back to the Korean animators they'd hire, and they'd be like, what? And they'd just start smoking again and draw it all over the place. And they just gave up. They went, you know what?
And Rod Reben had a cigar. He's like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah. He just cares. He was like, you know how much money they're paying me for this? And nobody seems to care. So who gives a shit?
So they have a big hockey fight, and then it ends up that the Dreadnoughts, as predicted, steal the third piece. So now Cobra has a piece, the Joes have a piece, and the Dreadnoughts have a piece, and the Dreadnoughts are going to sell their piece for the highest bidder, which you think would sour them and their relationship with Cobra Commander since they're on retainer.
You think
as a group on retainer, they would have to give their piece to Cobra Commander because that's already paying you for nothing.
What's more impressive, though, is that clearly Cobra funded their part of it, but later they hired Zartan again. He's not ousted from the program after this, which I think says something. I think part of it has to do with the fact that when they steal it, they take their motorcycles and they drive straight up an ice wall.
Let's also mention where those fucking bikes come from, because they had to climb this. But they had to climb up the snow wall to get to where they had to get. Remember, the Dreadnoughts fell off the wall and Zartan saved them?
Okay.
So where did the bikes come from?
I think that we can clearly say that they were not good submariners, but they are excellent bikers, so I'm going to give them that.
No, but where did they appear? Did they conjure the bikes? Because they didn't have bikes strapped to their back when they were climbing their ice wall.
They're good bikers. So what happened was the submarine had them in there sort of on a pallet, and has an artillery sort of launch.
Launched them over the wall.
Yeah, launched them over the wall. They parachuted back down where they unpacked them and had their bikes that and their ordnance sense. In there.
I mean, it doesn't make sense, but that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Makes more sense than what happened here.
And then we get one more chance to revisit the relationship here between Storm Shadow and Spirit, where the life debt is fulfilled.
Repaid.
Yep.
He saves Spirit from getting crushed with rock ice.
When we meet again, it will be as enemies, and they both have a quiet moment of acceptance.
I remember as a kid going, they're going to fight again.
I loved it.
Now, the last thing I want to mention is slightly before in the middle of the hockey fight is that Roblox and Honblue are captured and sent to the arena of sport, because it feels like that's all Cobra Commander really cares about. They meet Duke and Snake Eyes, who have been captured in the previous episode. And Duke and Roblox engage in a very cool guy handshake.
Yes.
And I was like, whoa. Maybe Duke isn't quite as square as we thought he was.
No, I mean, like
he's got a whole cool guy handshake.
I think Conrad Hauser learned a little jive somewhere along the way, which I thought there's your stereotype. Like, no, he's Roblox, he's cool, but he is gonna do that really long extended handshake thing that every white guy thought black guys did back then.
And, I mean, it did end in a kind of dorky thumbs up to each other, but
Duke added that, and Roblox let him have it. What if at the end we do this? Sure, that's a good idea. Because don't forget, Duke's the boss.
Yeah, I mean, is he?
I mean, Duke in the context, he outranks.
Duke was the first sergeant, and Roblox was, I'm looking for him here.
Oh, wow.
I had it, shit. Well, I had that whole spreadsheet I created long ago.
Roblox
was a corporal. Yeah, no, Duke outranked him. Yeah, Roblox just a corporal.
Yeah. So there is that.
He had to give that to him.
We are running long, and we're going to have to get out. But I think we really need to mention the Kylo Ren scene, where Cobra Commander throws his chair through the console, and then the Cobra troopers come in, and he blames it on shoddy workmanship and orders like the head of IT fired, and the troops do sort of like there's these little bits of like the people who wrote this weren't idiots, like.
Oh, no, they knew what they
exactly
were doing.
Right. They knew what was dumb, and they were like, let's put this in. It was a great little scene. Like, it was fun.
Yeah, they were like, are you sure? It's like, what are you talking about? Punish him. Okay. And they're just going to tell him they punished him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we definitely punished him.
Yeah, no, he died in the arena of the sport last week. Did you not remember?
I do want to bring one more thing before we go. My last note, which is from the beginning of the episode, in which, again, Doc shows his technical prowess to, first of all, he creates the smoke screen, and then he also is able to scan the water to find out there's magma, and then he also shoots some rockets. And I thought, wow, maybe Doc's secondary skill is
everything,
like technology weapons, because he's the doctor. So I looked him up again. Doc's primary specialty was medical doctor, obviously. Mm-hmm. And a secondary specialty you'd think would be heavy weapons or gunnery. It's chaplain's assistant. He was the pacifist character.
Yeah, a medic famously his secondary thing wouldn't be weaponry, wouldn't be infantry or something like that. Because he's
in the war, the medics also had to fight when the fighting happened. But like, this was the character who very famously in the comics and the toys was the pacifist, mm-hmm. not displayed here. Also, he was a captain. He outranked even Duke.
He was Giovanni Ribisi right. From Private Ryan. He was that character.
Right.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So
there you go.
We're gonna wrap this up next week.
Amusement Park of Terror.
I every time one of those happens, I go, oh right. I remember
that.
Said
the title in every episode, because this episode they definitely said it's a battle on the roof of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't remember if they said the title of
they
every
said
show like
it,
that.
They said it in the preview. They said it in the like, you know, like next week on.
No. I mean, Destro says in this episode, it'll be a battle on the roof of the world.
Well, we'll have to listen to
The title specifically.
My dear podcast Jamoke.
Yeah, so there you go. There's part four. Next week, part five of G.I. Joe Corner. And up to you if you want to do one email or not.
I'm going to do one, and it's going to be short.
Okay.
I'm going to do one. Ken from the Great White North writes in and says, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if you publish a comic book and you print in it that the book is copyrighted, is it actually copyrighted? Thanks. And I'm not a lawyer, nor is Connor. Connor, are you a lawyer?
No, but I did make a comic.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And what I did was I sent it to the lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And then they handled it. So I don't know.
So this is going to be my answer. If this is a concern, don't ask us. You need to ask, if this is the thing, you need to ask someone who knows. Don't write to podcasts about legal advice unless that is a legal advice podcast, and even then confer with counsel.
I made a comic for my old job. We had a in-house counsel.
Mm-hmm.
One day the counsel sent me all the legal lines to put in the comic.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that – I assume not, but I don't know. I don't know how copyright law works.
We don't – you just did it. You went, oh, okay, you have a tie.
But she said, here, put this in the inner flap, this on here.
She probably
cool.
didn't have a tie. I bet she was desk sort of casual, business casual sure. kind of. Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That's fine. So, we'll get back to him. You know what? I'll be honest. We can use some more questions if you want to send some questions in. If you've been thinking
– we have a ton.
Yeah, but we have backed up, but, you know, sort of recent questions. I was looking through the new ones, and I thought we could use some more. Been a couple. So that's contact@ifanboy.com. Also, don't forget, if you want to, you could send us a recording, a voicemail kind of thing.
Yep.
That's also possible. That would be, you know, just keep it to 30 seconds if you can. Be direct with that. I don't want an essay. We don't need it.
It could be like 30 seconds.
Yes. Talksplode, Kelly Thompson Talksplode, that I've been talking about for a long time, is a reality. It is available for your ears right now. Her and I had a second conversation, and dare I say, I think it was better than the first conversation. So I don't think you lost out all that much. It was a different conversation, though. Mm-hmm. But you can read all about her career somewhere else, but we can actually chat about things. I really liked her. I really enjoyed talking to her. It's one of those things where, like, I had to do it again, and I was like, I'm fine. I look forward to that. So it was another good one. I don't think I've done one that I didn't like, and I always say that, but every time I'm like, oh, that was really good too, because it's fun to talk to smart, funny, creative people. That's all I know. There is a media splode that has been recorded, our next episode, which is the patron reward. I don't know when
it should be out.
It should be out,
or it may not be, but it should be.
Yeah. In it, the idea about these was that we would talk about non-comics media, but there isn't much other than TV. So we talk a lot about TV, unfortunately.
Not our fault, or fortunately.
It's not our fault. TV is the thing we're best at talking about after comics, so that it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And then this coming week, you'll have the next episode for the Animation Brain Trust, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. That is recorded. That is in the system. It's definitely going to be coming out this week. And you'll enjoy that. And then coming soon is the fabled Booksplode.
There it is. I'm looking at it. It's right in front of me.
I read a couple more issues. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Yep.
The next Booksplode is going to be a 35-page prestige issue comic.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going
to
be short.
Get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can comment on this show. You can comment on any of the other things we just talked about. You can find... That was my 90th Talksplode. I didn't do all of them. Ron did a bunch of them in the beginning, but I've done most of them. So there's 90 Talksplodes there, and all of those conversations have something worthwhile in them. And I lost my train of thought. There we go. You will find out what the pick of the week is if you follow us on Twitter at iFanboy. You can follow us on Facebook or like us there. Will you like me, please? Facebook.com/iFanboy, and there's at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, which seems to be the least mentally damaging of social networks at this point. It's the only one that Connor has not eschewed entirely. And it's down to my final ones for me. You can follow us individually, C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, Jay Flanagan on Instagram. I haven't been on Twitter in a long time, but it's the same there. Ron XO, were he here, would be on Twitter and Instagram. And then we have a YouTube page because, you know, we are a digital entity. YouTube.com/iFanboy, and you can keep up with the old video shows as they're being uploaded at the best pace that we can manage at the point.
I've been muting my microphone because there's a noise outside that I don't know what it is. But if you'd like the show, you can write a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to your podcast, whatever aggregator.
You gotta change that line.
Star rating as we get out of here, but there's something happening outside. Write a review, star rating, whatever you can do to help. That helps the algorithm, helps people find the show. We appreciate that. Even better than that is tell your friends, your comic store, your buddies. If anyone approaches you on the street, and you say, you tell them to get back 6 feet and then also listen to iFanboy. And we'd appreciate that.
My mask? I got good news for you. Also, when you do go write that star rating, I want you to count how many we have and our average. And then I want you to go to Around Comics and check their average of how many they have. And then send them a screenshot of that information. If you could do that.
I don't endorse this ongoing feud. I am Connor. We will be back next week.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much for listening and all the other stuff you guys do. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.